Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Out Loud. This is Jacob Anderson Mitchell, and tonight we are examining gender, sexuality, and human trafficking, modern-day slavery in our midst. We're fortunate to have a panel of experts joining us today to talk about this troubling issue. So our panelists today are Michelle Bart, chair of the Silpharmist International Northwestern Region's Northwest Coalition Against Trafficking, and she also serves on the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children's Advisory Board and is the host of Voices for Justice on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Thank you, Jacob.
All right, we also have Chris Hennell, the coordinator of the Human Trafficking Program at the YWCA of Greater Portland. She has 19 years' experience working in child welfare with the Oregon Department of Human Services, where she worked as a caseworker, supervisor, and branch manager of Union, Walla Walla, and Baker Counties. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Great. And then, last but not least, we have Elisa Sapphire, who works for the Sexual Assault Resource Center, one of only two standalone sexual assault agencies in the state, as a case manager and advocate for sexually exploited youth. She has 9 years of experience working with the anti-sexual violence field, and thanks for joining us, Lisa.
Thank you. Good to be here.
You know, so I'm just going to jump right in, and the first thing I want to just ask, you know, Michelle, maybe you could start us off by explaining, what is human trafficking?
Human trafficking is when an individual has been coerced or kidnapped, abducted into something against their will and trafficked, whether sex or labor trafficking. And here in the Portland area, we've been focusing a lot on the sex trafficking issues that are plaguing Portland as the number two community in the country right now for sex exploitation of children and minors.
Wow. So, I mean, here in Portland, I think we all know that there are kids on the streets who are being exploited, but real-life slavery, how can that be happening here?
Chris?
Well, and I think people have a reaction to slavery. I think it's a very visceral thing, and it is. It's exactly what it is. When you're being exploited against your will, you don't want to do something, but you don't have the resources, you don't have the money, you don't come from a stable background. International trafficking right now is also huge because of the same issues. There's war, the economic situation. And so slavery, I think, is a very apt description of something where literally you are being forced to do something that if you could choose, you would not want to do. And it's often very much attached to violence. So it's not like you get to say, oh, I'm done, I want to leave now. So certainly those all imply to me slavery.
And how is this happening? You said that Portland is like the second biggest city for this happening. Is that right?
That is what we've been told by a recent study that took place back in February.
And how can this be happening in Portland?
Well, it's happening everywhere. And so Portland's just one of those communities that isn't exempt from sex trafficking and from exploitation of children. We have exploitation of women nationally, internationally, of course, but we certainly have a problem with exploitation of women and children anywhere in this country. And so we tend to look elsewhere and forget about our own backyard, but it's really important to remember that it's happening here too, just like it's happening everywhere else. And we have a lot of, like the I-5 corridor, 84, large trafficking highways, superhighways that really connect bigger cities on the West Coast. And so that's one thing that contributes to Portland being a stopping off point for people who are exploiting these kids and these women. It's a really easy way for them to get from one city to the other on the West Coast, and we're a great place to just stop along the way.
Plus a couple borders in between.
Mm-hmm.
Is that also happening on the shipping lanes?
Yes, definitely. That's another reason that Portland's up there in terms of, you know, and there is this debate whether we're second, third, fourth, whatever. And the bottom line is we are way up there in the list in terms of cities where this is going on. And the ports do play a big part. And when I worked in child welfare, we had kids being sent up and down the I-5 corridor, and they were also carriers of drugs. So you see those same kind of drug industry kind of pathways being also used for sex trafficking.
And I think it's important to also point out that what everyone envisions trafficking to be like, which usually when you say trafficking, people think internationally, it's happening right here domestically, and we're talking hundreds of thousands of individuals, women, girls, and traffic victims such as boys. And with that, you can't underestimate why somebody's being trafficked or how they're being trafficked. It could come from an affluent background where they come from a family and they were kidnapped. It could come from just recently in Chicago last night, there were a mother and father arrested for trafficking their own child. So with the economic situation, we have a war going on right here in America, and it's modern day slavery.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. You know, certainly it seems like some other things, like I think violence against women increases in economic hardship. And so is it something that we see more of when times get tough?
Oh, definitely. I believe so.
And also, yeah, again, focusing on our domestic scene. But internationally, I mean, you look at the war and the direct link between war, terrorism, and just good old sexism, and how women are treated not only in this culture but other cultures, that they're just ready-made to be victims, to be sold as a commodity, and they could be sold over and over again. So you can get a high yield on your return if you want to get really crass about the marketing aspect of it. So definitely unrest, and of course it's no surprise to anybody that the world is struggling economically, and certainly our country is. So they all do come together in terms of putting kids, again, focusing on kids at risk.
Yeah, and Michelle, you know, you sent me a quote, and it says, a human trafficked homeless 16-year-old boy was asked what agencies in Portland could do in order to help him and thousands like him get off the street. He paused, turned to the folks at the partnered organization, and said, obliterate Stark Street. What does he mean by that? What's wrong with Stark Street?
From what I've gathered from organizations we've spoken with, unfortunately, in the LGBT community especially, when a child is a teenager or a youngster and their parents or their loved ones have found out that they're gay, a lot of the times those children get thrown out of the house, and they're considered runaways or throwaways, invisible, I think Chris and I have spoken about. And when they're on the street, from what I understand, you know, Seroptimus International, we're not out there rescuing the teenagers and the children. So Chris and Alyssa, they deal with that every day, and they see people every day. For us, we listen to the senators, we listen to the victims, we listen to the survivors, and from what I understand, Stark Street is a hub for runaway children, especially boys, that in particular have been thrown out because of their sexual orientation.
One of the high risks for any child being trafficked, one of the high risks is if they're a sexual minority youth. Because it implies that phenomenon of the parent or the guardian finding out, not tolerating it, and out they go. In fact, some kids have talked about, well, at least the street isn't more dangerous than at home. So
that's
you have that phenomenon going on that adds that extra layer of grief for the sexual minority youth being out there.
Right. What we know about trafficking is that one of the biggest risk factors for being picked up by someone, a pimp or someone who's going to take advantage of these youth, is being on the street in the first place. Someone who is homeless, someone who has run away, someone who's been thrown away. And about 40% of youth that are homeless on the streets identify as LGBTQ. And so that what we know then is how higher risk these youth are for being trafficked and for being exploited sexually.
And before you get to human trafficking, so many other factors play a part to all of that too. You know, whether they're being thrown away, kidnapped, abducted, running away, you know, we're dealing with Craigslist and lots of different aspects like that nowadays on the internet, things of that nature. And when it gets to a point where they're out there, the law enforcement has stated within 46 minutes when a child gets off of a bus or they're seen as a runaway or lost, you know, they're approached. And before too long, the drugging starts and then the trafficking starts and they feel helpless and hopeless. And so that's what organizations like all of ours are hoping to bring more attention with radio shows like yours and be able to bring more hope to them and help that they need.
Well, that's amazing. 45 minutes, that's really disturbing.
And usually the approach is very much, hey, what's going on? Have you had anything to eat? Gosh, you look like you're hungry. Hey, could I buy you a hamburger? Come on, you know, hey, nobody else cares about you. You know, I care about you. Come on. That kind of an approach is a pretty standard way of trafficking these kids, getting them involved in the life.
Oh, Chris. All right, well, we're going to talk in just a minute about some of the resources that are available for these kids. But first, let's take a quick break. We're going to hear a song from the Indigo Girls, Amy Ray. This is from her solo album, Prom, and this song is called Rural Faggot. That was Amy Ray's song, Rural Faggot, and you're listening to KBOO Radio. This is Out Loud, and we're talking with Michelle Bart, Chris Hennell, and Elisa Safar about human trafficking. If you're just joining us or you miss any part of tonight's show, you can get a download version from our website at kboo.fm/outloud a little bit later in the evening. You'll also find resources there and important links and contact information for the experts on tonight's panel. You know, but we've been talking about some of the what human trafficking is and some of the things, like we were just hearing about how kids are approached within 45 minutes by somebody who looks like they're there to help, and they're often not. They're often there to trap kids. So we want to talk about resources. And first, there is a great hotline, and that number is 1-888-37-3788. Did I get that right?
That's correct.
All right, and that is for the National Human Trafficking Resource Center. So we'll repeat that number a couple times throughout the show, and then we'll also have it on the website. But, you know, so kids are being approached by the wrong people, but where can they go? So why don't we actually, each of you, sort of represent a resource that's out there, so maybe we can just go around the circle, talk about where you work, what that resource is, and other resources that you might know of that are available. This is Chris. And if you could just say your name first so that people know who's talking.
This is Chris from the YWCA of Greater Portland. And I think at this point I'll defer until my colleagues have a chance to talk, because we're kind of like a good future, some things that we're hoping to develop for the future. So maybe I can defer to Lisa about your services.
Sure. This is Elisa Sapphire from the Sexual Assault Resource Center. And the Sexual Assault Resource Center is a sexual assault agency out of Washington County, and we serve all survivors of sexual assault in Washington County. We have a 24-hour support line that serves anybody who calls regarding sexual violence, if you're a significant other or if you've experienced it yourself. And then we do community outreach and prevention education in classrooms. We have mental health facilities, counselors for women who've experienced sexual violence, men who've experienced sexual violence. We have these services in English and in Spanish. It's all free. Our newest program that we've added about 2 years ago, and then we're funded starting the beginning of 2010, is specifically to support sexually exploited youth. And so we have two advocates and case managers that work specifically with these youth in the community, and we work with them to sort of help them navigate through the system if they're working with DHS or if they need to look for medical treatment, or if they're looking for mental health services, if they're looking to what we try to do is support them however they're looking for support. And so we work with them in their foster homes, we work with them in their placements and facilities throughout Portland, and we do what we can to help them move out of the life and into a more supportive environment and one where they can really succeed. We build their skills. We try to get them finished with their high school if they had dropped out or if they had problems staying in school. We work to get their GEDs if they can't go back to school in a traditional way. We do jobs training so they can get out and get a job and start making money in a way that gives them a lot more empowerment than what they were doing before on the street. And so we try to give them this really well-rounded support system that gets them successful in the community in a way that feels really good for them and feels like it could be sustainable.
That's great. And why don't you say some contact information, phone numbers or websites that people can go to find out more information?
Sure. So our 24-hour support line, that phone number is 503-640-5311. We have a whole lot of volunteers that operate that line 24/7, and every single volunteer that we have on our hotline is trained for sexual violence and then also specifically trained to work with minor victims of sex trafficking as well. And anyone who had questions about that could also call that line.
And
get
website?
More information. Our website is www.sarcoregon.org, and SARC is SARC, the Sexual Assault Resource Center. We will be revamping that website in the near future to make it a little more youth-specific for our program and a little more interactive.
That's great. Okay, Michelle?
Michelle Bart with Soroptimus International, Northwestern Region. Soroptimus International is an international 501c3 not-for-profit organization. We're a service organization. We're all volunteers. We are in 125 countries. In our region alone, the Northwestern region, we represent 5 states. So we have 108 clubs serving. Part of it is Portland. But we represent Oregon, Washington, Alaska, Northern Idaho, and Montana. And out of the 108 clubs that we have throughout the region, we have about 3,600 plus members. So we're professional women. in management positions or owning our own businesses, et cetera. And our mission statement is the same across the board throughout all 125 countries, and that's improving the lives of women and girls in local communities and throughout the world. Up until human trafficking, we did a lot on workplace violence. We did a lot on Women's Opportunity Awards, the Violet Richardson Awards, where we honor 14 to 17-year-old girls. We try to empower women to go back to school if they're single parents, head of household.
Yeah, that's kind of the what I know about it. And so I'm sort of surprised. Like, this seems like a, you know, like, wait, well, you know, how did you get into, how did the organization move from that into working with trafficked, you know, sex trafficking and human trafficking?
Well, under the Bush administration, they made January 11th National Human Trafficking Awareness Day, which is January 11th. And Seroptimus started learning more about that. And where I came from in the Los Angeles area, we had somebody from the Orange County Human Trafficking Task Force speak to us. And by then, our region down there just started getting involved. So when I got here, I had already had a human trafficking conference under my belt that I had chaired down there. And we started doing a forum here. And then last year, we decided to move that forum into a different direction and make it more of a conference-style event, if you will, in January, and bring coalition partners together like SARC, like the YWCA, and many others that we've partnered with, not only in the Portland area but throughout the five states, so that we can begin to empower the victims but keep the awareness out there and be able to move the mountains it's going to take for all of us to work together in order to rescue the girls. So our part in all of this is education, is awareness, trainings, things of that nature, sending out guest speakers to clubs, empowering our own clubs to make a difference in human trafficking. And then after the conference in January of this past year, we started the Northwest Coalition Against Trafficking, other known as NWCAT. And folks can visit the website at nwcat.org. And again, it's 365 days a year that we're working to carry their messages. We're not reinventing the wheel with Seroptimus. We're just trying to push the agenda of our coalition partners and those of our friends at Polaris Project, which is the national arm on human trafficking, which is the number you've been stating through the show.
Let's say it one more time, too.
It's 888-3737-888. And we encourage folks to call them, and that's how we're able to carry the message on human trafficking, whether it's through the Y, SARC, or in our effort. Most of our campaign marketing is used what Polaris Project and the Department of Justice use, which is look beneath the surface. We want to look beneath the surface at modern-day slavery because it's happening in our backyard and right here in Portland.
All right, now we're back around to
here
the why. And I will just I'll help you by leading into that. And this is actually, so Chris at the YWCA of Greater Portland, you know, we heard through the paper that the organization, not you personally, will be receiving $900,000 to establish a shelter for victims of human trafficking. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. One day we were sitting around in our office and we got a call by Senator Ron Wyden's office saying, hey, guess what? I mean, it really was that dramatic. I mean, nonprofits, you don't get telephone calls saying, oh, here it comes. So, immediately, we were notified by Senator Ron Wyden. His work in this area on a national and local level has just been exemplary. And also Commissioner Diane McKeel has been and continues to be a great community force in this whole effort. And about a year ago, the YWCA of Greater Portland started showing various agencies who are well expert in working in the human trafficking area a little building that we owned that we thought would make just a dandy place to start as a shelter residential facility for girls who are commercially sexually exploited and trafficked. So no money, a dream, an idea, you know, took various organizations out. Everybody said, gee, what a great idea, but there's no money. So we were all rather waiting for, there's a big block grant there we are hoping to get, see, coming from Ron Wyden, Senate Bill 2925, and that is definitely much larger money coming towards the communities and block grants. But we were anticipating seeing that money, hopefully, in the early part of 2011. So we get notified by Ron Wyden's office about this money coming in, and I can't even tell you. It just feels like the efforts that have been put by the people in this room and other agencies, the county, commercially sexually exploited children project through Jocelyn Baker in the county, those efforts, sometimes it feels like the stars align. And we really, really are hopeful that this money and our work with the agencies, it has to be an agency effort, a multi-agency effort. There's no way that one agency could possibly do all the services that are needed to get these kids being able to make some choices about their lives.
So can you give us, imagine, like, a couple of years from now, how do you picture, what's it going to look like?
What I would like to see, well, we always say start small but think tall. So what we envision is a shelter facility, residential, where perhaps seven girls can live. And involved in that hall would be 24/7s, and it would be a place where they could be safe, which is a key concept and mission of the YWCA anyway, and then start getting services. Various agencies like SARC, LifeWorks, Janus could come in, mental health services, and work with these girls and help them on their road to recovery. And it is not just kind of a one-shot deal. You know, there's a whole process that you have to work with these kids. Next to the facility, we also have a large house that we think would be great as a drop-in center. So we're talking a two-prong kind of thing when you talk about the big dream. And so there would be the facility for those girls who are working their recovery to get away from the life, and then a drop-in center just for these kids where they can be and maybe start learning that you can trust an adult or you can get services. Or perhaps one of the girls that are getting ready to graduate from the facility could come in and be a leader and help work with the kids. So, I mean, that's the dream. It's a small little place, but that's the dream. And I just really feel we're there. We're going to be working real hard and continue to work with the partners who've been involved with this effort. So we're very pleased. YWCA is kind of new to this scene, though, throughout our mission and history on an international, national, and local level, our interest and concern about violence in women and children and that they have a safe place to be is top of our mission.
And I think what you'll hear from, this is Michelle from Seroptimus, what you've heard already around this table, the word empowerment, I mean, their mission statement is empowering women, eliminating racism. That's exactly our mission. In so many words as well. And it's bringing these women and girls back to empowerment so that they can reclaim their lives and move forward and be that future that they know that they can have. And all of our agencies work very diligently on that every day.
You know, Elisa, you were talking a little bit about prevention. You mentioned prevention, and I know that was partly just in response to sexual assault in whole. But can we talk a little bit about what kind of prevention efforts are out there for human trafficking and what they look like?
Well, that's a great question, Jacob. unfortunately, there's not a whole lot that at least I could speak to right now that's out there. I know that at least in our community, there are organizations nationally that do some really great work. There's a really wonderful organization out in Boston, I believe, that does like a 9 to 10 week group with girls called My Life, My Choice. That's really, really wonderful and aimed at primary prevention as well as secondary and tertiary prevention. What we really need to do is target communities that are actually exploiting the women and the girls, not look at prevention from how do we keep these girls from going with these men and with these boys. What we need to do is reduce the demand to be buying and renting these girls for sex or for sexual favors And we need to make that punishable so that there's a really big risk in going out and buying a girl off of 82nd Avenue and asking her to do things.
Right now, most of the punishments are typically against the women and the girls rather than against the men or whoever.
Portland has done a really great job of not hauling these girls off to detention. The Portland police has really focused on getting these girls service instead of criminalizing them. But that doesn't help in catching these guys that are doing it. So the girls are being treated a lot better than they were in the past and that they are in a lot of other communities throughout Oregon and nationally, but we're still not seeing as much prosecution as we would all like from the pimps and the Johns. And I know that they're working really hard at that, and there's a lot of barriers for them in prosecuting.
But you don't also see a lot of prosecution on a federal level either. Usually it's whatever the state laws are. In the state of Washington, they just passed one of the most stringent laws in America, and that is if you get caught with your pants down and you're with a child or someone under the age of 18, you better be prepared to answer why you have to go and get your car out of the pound. You're going to have to answer to your wife why your picture's in the paper. And the more we do that, like Elisa said, is stopping the demand, we go after them, then there's nobody to sell to.
Right, and I was going to say, the media, it seems like that in, at least in, you know, some past efforts about, you know, just even, you know, prostitution in general, having photos of Johns in newspapers has always been a really huge impact.
A major impact. And folks like Shared Hope, which is right there in Vancouver, and Linda Smith and the YWCAs on both sides of the river, and SARC, which goes over the river too. You know, it's making sure we're all talking the same language and working together, but we have to start somewhere. I mean, just the sticker with the 888 number on it, this sticker now, because of Diane McKeel's and also Senator Wyden, in the state of Oregon, anywhere that serves liquor has to have this sticker somewhere in their facility, whether it's a grocery store, a convenience store, a bar. So that's just one step. But it, like Chris said earlier, there's so many levels. And then when you finally rescue that little girl, you know, there's so much to go into it. It's not that she stays for 30 days and she's cured. We've got survivors that we work with every day that have been survivors for 20 years and are still in therapy and working the program every day so that they still feel whole. And it's a process.
And if I could just add something about the prosecution piece, Oregon's law, period. If you are with a kid who is under 18, there's no taking car. I mean, it is a crime, period. Period. There's no deals made. Proving it is another issue. The girls tend not to be the best witnesses for a lot of reasons, usually because they're afraid to testify. So you have all that piece. But notoriously, Oregon has less stringent laws about that. And I know that there's work, as you were saying, Michelle, underway to change this and make it more stringent. That if you are with a kid cannot give consent.
Yeah.
Period. They may act like they give consent, but the law is very clear is that they do not have the ability to consent. So if you are caught sexually molesting, sexually involved with a child, and we have to be clear about this, the average age of kids coming in or being exploited now is 12 years old, so we're talking kids, that there's just no question that there's no consent, there's no, oh, gee, I didn't know, boom, it is a crime. And I think they're just working really hard right now to tighten up the penalties on that.
Okay, I think we're going to have another quick break, and I'm going to encourage everyone to call in during that time if you'd like to join the conversation. Again, it's 503-231-8187, and I also want to remind you of our 800 number, the 888 number for the National Human Trafficking Resource Center. That's 1-888-373-7888. And we're going to take a little break. This is Amy Ray again, and this time it's her song, Covered for You.
We'll be right back. Once again, you are listening to Voices for Justice. Today's show is pre-recorded. The phone lines are closed. But this is KBOOZ 90.7 FM Out Loud, pre-recorded from a previous interview on human trafficking in the Portland area. If you are a traffic survivor or a traffic victim currently, the 800 number is 888-3737-888. Thank you for listening to Voices for Justice and our friends at Out Loud.
You are listening to Out Loud on KBOO, and that was covered for you by Amy Ray. We've been talking about gender, sexuality. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about gender and sexuality and how it impacts human trafficking, but we have been talking a little bit about that. If you're just joining us or you missed any part of the show, you can go and get a download version of it after the show at kboo.fm/outloud. Before the break, Chris was talking about the, you know, age of consent and the problem, you know, with people having sex with someone who's younger and not thinking it's an issue. And the problem sometimes is that kids sometimes don't think it's an issue. They just think they're in love. This seems like it's particularly, you know, I would say a problem or sort of a concern when it comes to the LGBT community. So many young gays and lesbians have their first time and are sort of like introduced into this life and into this great identity of their own by someone who's much older than them. Can we talk a little bit about that and how that plays into to what we're talking about here? Anybody? Anyone want to take it?
Well, you know, I guess I'm going to kind of general it out again, but, you know, your boundaries are so, even on a good day, you know, trying to figure out one's sexual identity. And certainly while there's positives around that in terms of how society looks at that, it still has a long way to go. And so there's still that fuzziness just around boundaries. So, okay, so let's say you're kind of the classic at-risk kid out there, and you might be a sexual minority kid, and you're out there, and home is awful, and you just assume be on the streets. And so, and it's, you know, I have to be real, 95% of the buyers are men. So just putting that right out there. So you're approached by a man. So you're a young boy, you're under 18, you're approached by a man who says, hey, you know, I kind of get where you are, and, you know, I can be a supporter around that, and I could be with you and show you some good sites. And it does. I mean, I don't kind of have like a black and white answer about that. The bottom line is, that technically it's illegal for somebody to have sex with somebody at a certain age. So it is tricky. I guess
it's
my best response for that.
Yeah, and it's so tricky. I mean, we worked a little bit with, like, kids who've gone through, like, you know, been through some kind of sexual assault. And, you know, so many of them, especially boys, they often actually have some little bit of enjoyment with it, and it's so confusing for them. It becomes such a layered guilt, you know, trauma, you know, whatever thing that makes it so difficult for them, because their body may respond in a way that's like, well, that something about that was enjoyable, and yet the whole experience isn't, because it is, again, the situation where someone doesn't have choice, doesn't have control. And, you know, we also very much have a situation where sometimes these issues don't impact children at the time, but years later, like you said, 20, 30 years later, sometimes you just never get over that. You know, we just often never get over these traumas from childhood.
Right.
I think we have a phone call. Crystal, are you there?
Yes.
All right. Well, you're a little low, but
can you tell us?
Oh, here we go. Can you tell us your question or comment?
Yeah. First, thank you for this topic. And before I ask the question, could you repeat the bit about how Seroptimus came about, acknowledging like the day of January 11th as a
January 11th is National Human Trafficking Awareness Day, and that was made by the Bush administration back in the 90s. I believe it was 96 or 97.
Crystal, do you have your radio on?
Question,
can you turn your radio down? We're having a little bit of back
oh, that's weird. Yeah, it's not on.
Okay, that sounded like it.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
So my question is, I was just really interested in how the Seroptimus chose this as one of their main issues, and is this something that could, you know, for different races, classes, gender, be a uniter or a divider?
That's a good question. Michelle, why don't you start?
I heard two questions there regarding Seroptimus and a uniter or divider. Can you elaborate a little bit, Crystal?
I think we lost her.
Oh, okay.
So maybe we can just address that.
Seroptimus, again, we got involved in this, domestic violence, and any kind of violences against women and girls have always played a factor with us, and we'll always support awareness on making it a better world for women and girls, and eradicate the war on women. There is a war on women in our country and around the world, and whatever we can do in order to empower and improve those lives of women and girls, we're going to do it. And in 1996, 97, I believe, I may be off on the year, but the last administration made January 11th National Human Trafficking Awareness Day. And so like Rotary, Kiwanis, Lions Club, Seroptimus, and many other organizations, we reflect that in many cities across the country have acknowledged January 11th as National Human Trafficking Awareness Day.
As to uniting or dividing, I can't speak to statistics on a national level, but what I can say for our community here in the greater Portland area, in the Tri-County, is that what we see is that youth are exploited regardless of their race, regardless of their class, regardless of their sexual identity. But what we do see is that people who experience oppression in other places, so if they do experience poverty, if they are experiencing racism, if they are experiencing homophobia, then they are more vulnerable than other kids and other youth, and so they are experiencing exploitation at a higher rate. And so what we see in our community from the numbers that we have at SARC, we see people of color being disproportionately represented based on the number of people that we have here in Portland of color. And so we have a higher number of kids of color on our caseload than you would expect if you were to just pull a random sample from the population.
And if I may address also, in regards to division a unity factor, when you're looking at the public, society as a whole, they judge certain characteristics. So if you say this young girl has been kidnapped, raped, abducted, and now is being trafficked, she's going to get a little bit of different attention. If all of a sudden you and your husband are walking down Stark Street after dinner and you see a boy or a girl of African-American, gay, lesbian, what have you, doing something that a Caucasian girl could, it could cause a rift. And we see that in society. Our organizations and the agencies and the politicians working to eradicate this epidemic that we have on our hands, we don't see that. We see a human being being exploited in a way that no other person should ever be exploited. And if you can't open your eyes and ears and make it your business, then you need to try to figure that out and deal with your own demons.
Well, I think also Lisa does a good job of just talking about the context again. And it's just not an accident. It's just not like it was sprinkled in the water. It's a real context right now. Well, it's always been in place in terms of violence against women and children. But there are particular reasons why the racism, the homophobia is what's supported in society. And so you do see that. I mean, this is like the overlay of all those forces coming to this point where there's certain assumptions made about sex. It's a marketing commodity. Men are entitled to have it. And those just begin to play into this whole, it almost would be an accident if it didn't come together like this, following that kind of thinking and those kind of sexism, and underlaid with violence, which the society certainly is. It all comes together almost in a natural way, in an unnatural way, in terms of the exploitation of these kids for sex. And we've got to be real clear about this. These are children who are out on the street that are being sold for sex. And the buyers, there's a huge market for them, and it is a marketable commodity that can be used over and over and over again. So just from a marketing standpoint, you're getting a heck of a lot of money as a seller for your product. So it's just a very, yes.
And as you're talking about this being kids, that's absolutely true. And what we are seeing is that the age of these kids is getting younger and younger and younger as the Johns and the buyers are looking for younger and younger kids. And we think that that's happening in part at least because of pornography and because of the way pornography is starting. Child pornography is illegal, but adult pornography is legal. But what they do is make people who are legally 18 look younger and younger and younger in the pornography
videos. Well, let's not even talk about pornography. I mean, talk about like mainstream TV. You know, the fact that we have, you know, most of the women who are starlets right now are size zero and, you know, weigh whatever, 100 pounds or less. Like, it's very much of a sort of an infantilization of womanhood that's been going on in the last decade or so. And so the more you have that, the more that we're making, you know, women, you know, crazy things like shaving certain areas, the more you make women look like they're girls and then sexualize them, the more that's just a natural outlet from that.
So we see this in mainstream culture, and I would challenge you, though, that it really has started in pornography. And so pornography is where it started, where shaving started
certainly
to be popular, and where the reason that happened was because they were making women look younger. Mm-hmm. And so then we've seen that translate into the mainstream culture where you have advertisements for kids' clothing being very sexual, have kids' toys that are really what I would, when I was growing up, would have been really inappropriate, which I think are still inappropriate.
Barbie is looking pretty exploitation.
You can buy, you know, thong underwear for eight-year-olds.
That's frightening.
Right? So there's a lot of, all this stuff has come from pornography. And what we know also is about 80% of the buyers out there show pornography to the prostituted women and girls to say, this is what I want you to do. This is what I want to be able to do to you. And so we know that pornography plays a part in this. And when we see what's happening in pornography with these women being made to look younger and younger and younger, and then we see the Johns coming out there and asking for younger and younger girls, this is a correlation that I think we really need to be addressing in our society.
And it goes back home, too. Look at last Halloween. You had a prostitute and a pimp outfit for a six-year-old. Why would you ever buy that as a parent for your child? You know, so we have to start somewhere, and the awareness factor and everything, you know, we're here to say it's wrong. You know, there's nothing right about that, you know. So, but we have to start teaching our children to grow up and be who they can be, and those that are being kidnapped and abducted and such. But there's a lot of things that are starting in the home, too, and parents have to take responsibility.
Oh, absolutely, because that's where the first access to pornography happens.
Definitely.
It's almost always
point.
In people's
good
homes,
point,
right?
Jake. Yeah.
You know, if you're worried about your kids and what's going to happen to them, don't keep the stuff at home. Don't be looking at it. I mean, again, why you should be wondering why it is that you want to watch something like that.
Exactly.
So I know we're getting to the end of our hour. So before we get too far to that, I want to make sure that we talk about, again, some of the resources. I'm going to be putting all these resources on the website. That's kboo.fm/outloud. There will also be a downloadable version of this show. I'll have links and the contact information for the experts that we're on today. We also want to just repeat that phone number. It's 1-888-838 there, and then 3737-888. So three more eights. So three eights at the beginning, 3737, three more eights at the end. And that is the National Human Trafficking Resource Center, and that is a 24-hour phone number that you can call. And then there's also information, I said, on the website where you can find out about SARC and the YWCA and the resources available there. So before, we've got a few more minutes, and I just want to make sure, like, what any other things we want to cover, and you wanted to talk really briefly about the conference coming up in January.
Seroptimus and our coalition partners. It's Seroptimus, Northwestern Region, the YWCA, Greater Portland, and Multnomah County Community Justice Department are presenting our annual human trafficking conference this January, January 14th through the 16th at the Portland, Oregon Convention Center and Red Lion Hotel. Information can be found at nwcat.org. It happens to be Martin Luther King weekend, and our theme is We Have a Dream, and our dream is to make sure the shelter at the Y happens.
That's a great dream.
That was just exactly. You know, I think we can hear all this, and we've certainly been involved with this work for a long time. And sometimes it can just feel so overwhelming. And really, it's as simple as the stream of this facility and really one person at a time. And for me, it really is, and I know this community can hear what I'm saying about this, it is just simply saying we will not tolerate something anymore. It doesn't have to be. It's that sitting in the bus when they ask you to get off. It's just saying this has to stop. And demanding that it stop and take part in whatever it might be. Maybe you'll help volunteer to clean up our facility to get it ready. Maybe you'll talk to a kid that you see is just out there and say, hey, you know, how you doing? You need a place to go. So I just really want to, and that really segues nicely in the Martin Luther King dream thing, because, you know, every great movement has to start with that step and that recognition of something. And I really do, just the efforts that I've been part of just in the past few months, I absolutely, absolutely am convinced that this is something that we can not only stop, but also help these kids and show them and demonstrate to them that adults aren't there to hurt them all the time, that they can trust people and can live a life free of violence. It's pretty simple, but that's what it's about.
Elisa?
I would just like to end from an advocacy perspective in saying that what we can do as a community, what we can do as individuals, is acknowledge that this is happening in Portland, is learn more about it, and believe that these kids are victims and that they're being hurt, that they're being exploited, and that when you encounter them, because we see them all the time, not walk by them and ignore them or blame them or think that they're making a choice. They might act like they're making a choice, like Chris said. They might even think that they're making a choice. But they are being exploited. They are being taken advantage of by adults in our community. And what we can do to help them is believe that this is not okay and let them know that as well.
Yes, and as a LGBTQ show, you know, I just want to repeat that so many, you know, the majority of these kids that are out there, unfortunately, are from our community. They're from our community, and we are the ones who need to be stepping up to the plate and treating them like they are our children, because they are our next generation. So that's a call out to all of you to do something more, to get up and do something to make things a change. You know, Michelle, Lisa, Chris, I want to thank you guys for joining us on the show. Next week we have, which is Tuesday the 17th at 6 p.m., Out Loud is going to focus on the Cascade AIDS Project. In the meantime, stay proud, live out loud, and here's Amy Ray with Driver Education.
Self-gas, tragic, coming to a stop, assault, and rocket.
You've been listening to Voices for Justice, a pre-recorded interview from our friends over at KBOO 90.7 FM's Out Loud and Proud. This interview was on human trafficking with coalition partners in and around the Portland area. A couple corrections in regards to the January 11th Human Trafficking Awareness Day. That is January 11th each and every year. But I made a mistake on the year. I was thinking 1996. It was 2006. And the United States Senate office did pass January 11th to recognize that as National Human Trafficking Awareness Day in America. So I do stand corrected on that. We do have a conference coming up January 14th through the 16th, 2011, in Portland, Oregon. We have many great speakers. I encourage you to go to nwcat.org. Again, that's www.nwcat.org. Thank you for listening, and we're going to close with Light from Your Eyes from the group Is. Thank you. Thank you.